Lights out, full throttle. The good, the bad, and the Bernie of Formula One.
Read by me, Johnny Herbert.
And me, Damon Hill. Damon and Johnny here.
F1's answer to Anton Deck.
Between us, we have about 100 years' experience of driving motor cars quickly. We have competed in 261 Grand Prix, spawning 25 wins, 49 podiums, one world championship, and 458 championship points. We even have a win at Le Mans to our name, not to mention two crushed feet, a hair transplant, and a pierced upper thigh. That said, when it comes to chatting about all things F1, we're still relatively intact and can mix it with the best of them. Despite its immense popularity, it's often been argued that F1 can be a bit too serious. Well, nil desperandum, ladies and gentlemen, because we, Damon Hill OBE and Johnny Herbert DNF, are here to prove the doubters wrong by swapping honest, forthright opinions and stories involving automotive daring do and daring don't.
For example, I took part in the very first FIA Formula One drivers press conference at Silverstone many years ago. And had it been today, I'd probably have been dragged from the room by the scruff of my neck and fired from a cannon. To kick things off, the person running the press conference went around every driver and asked them what they'd be if they weren't a Formula One driver. For some reason, the answers were pretty humdrum. Astronaut or engineer, basically. So when we got to me, I thought I'd try to be a bit more creative. And after stroking my chin for a few seconds and trying to look reflective, I think I'd be a ball sniffer at Wimbledon. I don't know why.
Hello, Johnny. Goodbye, good taste. That didn't take long. Our double act started in 2013 when filming race day show content for Sky F1 at Monza prior to the Italian Grand Prix. As we'd both won a Grand Prix there, our employers thought it would be a good idea to have us reminisce about our experiences for the further edification of the viewers. After getting mic'd up, we went around Monza on a Vespa, with me driving, of course, obviously, and chatted as we went. When watching the edit back in the Sky production office, some smart-ass presenter, who looks a lot like Simon Lazenby, chips in with, "Look, it's Dumb and Dumber." And from that moment on, an automotive entertainment behemoth was born. The audience seemed to like it, so we won in the end. Up yours, Lasers. We didn't mind a bit, looking like a couple of chumps, if that's what makes you happy. At last, we could drop the pretense of being responsible adults. Phew, what a relief.
Probably our biggest bugbear when it comes to broadcasting is that it's all a bit disposable. So whatever you say is usually forgotten within about a few seconds, which is why we decided to put pen to paper. We're not saying that every word that comes out of our sizable apertures is revelatory, but chatting about F1 is something we obviously thrive on, and the prospect of getting our opinions, experiences and stories down for posterity helps to redress the balance somewhat.
So it goes without saying that we're each going to ensure that the book is a true representation of our partnership. That is, we'll get everything out on the table and then decide that I'm right. That's the gag. You'll see. Enjoy. Chapter 1. Monaco.
I'll start this one. Probably the most anticipated race of the year globally. It's also the most boring. Discuss.
No, it's not. Okay, I'll colour this one in for you, Herbert. Let's hype it up a bit, at least. It's basically the most expensive film set on the planet. Monaco transcends motor racing. It's a carnival of excess, a celebration of massive amounts of wonga and bling, and one of the trickiest challenges a racing driver is ever going to have. I love it.
Okay, good challenge. So if we're going to have a chapter about Monaco, we really have to start with your old man, who used to be known as Mr. Monaco, of course.
Indeed he did. Dad's reign in Monaco wasn't quite as long as Prince Rainier's, but during the 1960s, which is considered to be a halcyon era for so many things, he won it five times, half the years in that decade. So he was the man. Somehow he managed to fit in winning the Indianapolis 500 in 1966 as well, which was a week after Monaco. He must have had to qualify the car in the USA for the Indy, then fly back to do the Monaco Grand Prix, finished a modest third, and then fly back out to Indy to win that. Busy man. Fascinating fact is that when Dad first went to Monaco, while doing his national service in charge of the engine room of HMS Swiftsure, he'd never even heard of the Monaco Grand Prix and knew nothing at all about motor racing.